And let's do just that. We have every line lit up and waiting to talk to our experts in studio. We have so much information to cover, so many interesting statistics. And you're right, Beezer, I've always been fascinated by him, and these statistics become more and more interesting. And we are here for the homeowner, so we're going to jump to that, though. Jackie, we won't bring on air because it was actually a question we had addressed earlier. She has white flies in her yard, tried several products. What to do?
Well, Jackie, if they are the typical white fly, there are some other treatments. But if you want to give us a call, we can come out and take a look at your property and kind of get a better idea, identify what kind of fly that is, and we'll be happy to come out there. There's no charge for that.
Like back to species identification.
Yeah. Once we ID and understand what we're dealing with, then we can solve the problem as opposed to kind of a Band-Aid approach. So.
Of just what product to try next. Where am I going to throw money at next?
Yeah, no, let's eliminate it once we understand, and then the problem's solved.
Although I'm sure product manufacturers wouldn't mind seeing 50 different products on their shelves that never worked.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
All right, Matt and Chandler. Oh, Curtis, you had an additional point on that?
Before we move on, I was just going to mention, with bees, obviously they're very beneficial, but if you see a swarm of them, you need to stay away just for safety reasons because we do have a lot of Africanized bees here, so I just want people to realize that.
Before we get off the bees subject, what percent? That was actually a pretty statistic guesstimation on what percent are Africanized.
Yeah, of wild or feral bees, over 95% experts say.
And they, you know, 95% was about the, you know, estimate about 10 years ago. So, I mean, really, to one extent or another, that gene, which is just they're more aggressive and they're lazy for Africanized bees, has been bred into pretty much all bees here now, to one extent or another. Some are a lot further along than others. So,
I'm not going to say anything. well, because it's the ones that are out and... I'm not going to say anything. So very good to know. And if you see them, stay away, back away. If they're in your yard, call.
Give a call. One thing, too, is when you do get a swarm, like say you have, there's a ball of bees on a tree around your house, you know, you do want to keep an eye on that. But most time, within 24 hours, they'll be gone because they're just resting. But if they do take up residence, that's important where you need to get someone out like us to have. And either we can relocate them or eliminate them.
Matt and Chandler has a question about scorpions. Welcome to the program, Matt.
Hey, guys.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I have on my street, I have a scorpion problem on the back block wall. So it separates from, you know, it's the HOA's property, I'm guessing. But scorpions, we started a scorpion hunt, me and about four neighbors, and with the black lights and the blowtorch, I guess. But we've been getting about 20 to 50 a night. We're down by the Intel plant, but I'm just kind of wondering what these guys do. Are they off the vibration because they're from this Intel plant down here? Or, you know, what? Because they're inside the block wall. I just can't get in there to get them, I guess.
Yeah, they're just very prevalent, you know, in Arizona. So it's not because of the vibration at the plant or anything. But what you're doing, blacklighting at night, that's great. Keep doing it because you're just going to keep, you know, reducing the populations, and that's actually really important.
Now, when we talk about, he's obviously finding them. How are you eliminating them once you find them, Matt?
What's that?
How are you actually eliminating them? I mean, are you doing a Brady Bogan golf swing, or are you
doing
Gallagher, the Squish-O-Matic?
Sledge-O-Matic.
Sledge-O-Matic.
There you go.
We started with the Sledge-O-Matic, and then we moved up to a blowtorch.
I like that blowtorch.
Yeah, I like that.
But and the one thing about the night benefit is you can actually watch the embers. But that's not something I would recommend to the rest of Arizona. If we had 4 million people out in the desert in the middle of the night with blowtorches, it'd be a matter of time before something went.
Now, is there anything you guys do to treat, you know, all of our block walls are, you know, a hollow block. Is there any treatment that you guys can inject into the block wall to get those rascals before they come out?
Yeah, we actually do. We actually inject through the columns of the block wall a product into there. And then we're also using another product, you know. So we actually use two products out in that area.
So Matt should give you guys a call and schedule an appointment with one of your techs to come down and take a look at him and see what he can do to slow down the migration through his property from the HOA into his, huh?
Yeah, we'd be more than happy to help.
Perfect.
I think we should hire him as well to be one of our nighttime scorpion hunters too, because you know it is not everyone wants to necessarily pay for that or do it on their own, but it's really one of the most effective ways because you're eliminating them right then and there. You're
constant
not having
vigilance
to wait for, you know, chemical
evidence of results.
Yeah, what is a typical bark scorpion's life cycle? I mean, how long do they live?
3 to 7 years.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Quite a while. So it's not like they go away after a year. They okay. they live a long, pretty long life. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Matt's got a question on woodpecker. Sadie's got a question with roof rats. Allison, back to the bees. But before we get there, Joyce has a question with javelina. Before we get to javelina, we're going to bring in urban wildlife specialist Darren Julian to give us a little education on the, I'm going to say, hog-sized rat of the desert. Darren, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Hog-sized rat.
That's what they look like to me. I don't know about you. What can you tell us about the javelina?
Well, I think that's kind of probably one of the animals that have the mired in myth and lore more than anything, any other animal we have in Arizona. You know, I think that the rat label comes from, because they're about the size of those capybaras that kind of migrated, or they're in South America. And since the javelina kind of started in South America and migrated north, I think that's kind of where that myth is started from there.
And when we talk about migration, I mean, I was in Flagstaff for the home show in March, and someone was showing me a picture of javelina in Flagstaff. You're talking thousands of feet elevation, over 7, closer to 8, of javelina in his yard, and then you've got him down in the desert floor to Yuma. Cody was talking about a client that called him because the javelina ended up in her parking garage at work at 101 in Raintree. I mean, mm-hmm. these things are everywhere.
Yeah, they've started to really expand their territories, not only expand into urban areas, but certainly into more and more non-tropical or desert type of environment, like you said, like Flagstaff, and it's kind of fairly new up there, and they're figuring it out that they can keep moving, and if, as long as they're finding food, they're going to keep going. So,
now, how can somebody, some animal that's almost that's as blind as a javelina, and have about what seems like about the horse sense of
a horse
a rabbit ant, yeah, populate like that?
Well, they're not completely blind. I mean, they have decent vision, but what they do is they see movement very well, and typically they use mainly their nasal senses to, you know who's in their mate, in their herd, and then certainly to find food. So they basically smell predators and or, you know, see predators at movement. So that's why it's easy to sneak up on a javelina if you've got the wind in your face and, you know, you're not moving. And a lot of times that's what happens is, you know, people will come around at night and come around a corner and spook the javelina, and one of them will see a person and run the other way. People automatically stop and freeze in their tracks, basically becoming invisible to the rest of the javelina. And so the rest of the herd just starts scattering, a lot of times running right into the face of what would be normally danger. So that's what a lot of times people tell me, that they were charged by javelina.
And it's not necessarily that they were charged. They were just running and they weren't moving, so the javelina didn't know where the threat originally came from?
Right. And then all it takes is, you know, maybe, you know, stomping your feet, clapping your hands or something like that, making some movement and some noise, and, you know, watch them hit the skids and turn around and go the other way.
Cody, what was the name of the bee dance? What'd you call it?
It's the, you got the round dance and the waggle dance.
If I come across some javelina, should I just do a bee waggle dance to give them maybe some coordinates to run the other way?
I think Romy has a secret desire to be a dancer.
You should,
like,
you should see him over
time.
Here. It's a good thing we're not on TV.
Yeah. He's shaking it. I guess we weren't being chased, but we used to, on our horseback up in the White Mountains, javelina would come out of the washes at us all the time. But apparently they weren't chasing us, so.
Apparently not. Well, we've got Joyce who's called in. She is a regular receiver of our newsletter, or saw something on Facebook. She knew Julian was going to be a guest, and she called over 20 minutes ago to wait to talk to Julian. So let's reward her for her diligence to get online and talk to the expert. Joyce, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rosie. I'm your neighbor on the other side of the neighborhood there. We've got a serious javelina problem. They talk about that they're just like to charge you. These are attacking people. It's getting to where we have to carry a weapon now to go for walks. and people with dogs have been chased. It's not just a charge. They're chasing you or right. taking the garbage out at night. There's a whole family, and I think they're on their second or third litter, and they've gotten very aggressive and protective, and I think it's the point they're going to have to trap them and get them out of there.
Derek?
Well, a lot of places in the valley are experiencing the same situation, and what it boils down to is human behavior and human habits. The more often that these javelina are in your neighborhood, around people, and certainly if they're getting a reward, if they're getting food in those areas, then and there's no negative consequences, and the more comfortable they feel, and as they become more comfortable, and they take more advantage of those food sources closer and closer to people. But, again, as they become more comfortable, what you would see, mainly the conflicts are between people and dogs. A lot of times it's usually medium to large-sized dogs, and what they're looking at those dogs as what much they would a coyote. And if humans are no longer a threat to them, you're just a bystander. They don't care about you. They're going after that dog. Other times, though, too, could be, you know, if you have a dog, you know, I hate to say this, but you smell like a dog, you know. I go, you know, if I go over to Buddy's house,
thanks,
dog,
Darren.
I come home and I'm hearing it from, you know, my dogs are sniffing me up and down. So there are some things that are, you know, easy to do, cost-effective and certainly effective deterrent to get into that. Do I need to take a break here and catch a breath or?
Yep, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're running a little late, so we'll be back right after this and wrap up.